Hello, you're listening to The Joys of Teaching Literature. We're here talking about all things teaching high school English. Also, you know, if you're a regular teacher, you know, general education teacher, this is a good spot for you too. If you want to know more about me, I have a website, theteachersworkshop.com. I offer online professional development for high school English teachers and general education teachers. And of course, the blog basically kind of goes along with this podcast. So today we're talking about next year. I think a lot of places have already started the school year. I saw online, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess people start in August. I'm out in the East, so we basically go Memorial Day to Labor Day. Not really. We usually go deep into June, but I'm starting the day after Labor Day, which is a huge weekend in the for the Jersey Shore, because everybody's sort of trying to squeeze in one last trip to the shore before the summer ends. So just sort of thinking about how next year can be better than the year before. That's really a big part of what I, who I am as a teacher, but also why I kind of started Teacher's Workshop, is because I think there's always an opportunity. It's a great thing about teaching. It's maybe one of the best things about teaching, is that we get a new class every year. They don't know who we are. They might have heard things, I'm sure, in the gossip in the hallways about, you know, the different kind of teacher we, you know, the different assignments that we give, the different, you know, our personality, whatever they're talking about. But for the most part, they don't know. And a lot of it's just talk, right? So they don't know who we are. We don't know who they are. They get a start. You know, that's actually a great thing about school too, is that they get a fresh start. So if they had a bad year last year, for whatever reason, they didn't get their work done or whatever it might be. And of course, with the pandemic and all the gaps in learning, I think it's really important that we have this, because it's a way of pressing, rebooting ourselves to some extent, and sort of really thinking about, okay, what did I do last year? We're really, in the past couple years, because of the pandemic, we've had to really think about, how do I do things? How can I change them to make them better suited for different learning environments? And how do I try to fill in these gaps that were there before? And, you know, just sort of having conversation with another teacher about how we used to kind of give all, it was like the A or F year of the pandemic. It was either you're doing the work or you're just not. And I feel like we're slowly and surely getting away from that, where it's back to whatever's considered normal as far as the performance of our students. But either way, topic of today's podcast is more fun and less stress. And that's kind of the main idea of everything what I do, is that, and this is true for teachers and for students, that learning should be this fun, exciting process. Of course, it's going to be boring at times. Of course, it's going to involve hard work. But I think when we say fun as in education, we mean meaningful, you know, something that we can to derive pleasure from, right? Not just like, haha, I'm having fun and I'm throwing a bunch of stuff around and we're doing posters and juggling balls or whatever. You know, fun can be something that is that you just enjoy coming into class, really. That's, I think, fun. Sometimes we use that word like it's loud and, you know, people are moving everywhere, and it doesn't have to be. It can be like that, and my classroom can be like that at times. And that's kind of the point of this, is to sort of talk about all the different things that we can do, to try to adjust to how our students learn. And also, of course, the second part of this is less stress, right? So how can we make our lives basically to the point where we're not getting burned out? We enjoy what we do. We don't feel like we're being overworked and underpaid. And of course, that's true, you know, with a lot of people across the country. You know, a lot of people, I feel like, think that, and this is also why I started Teacher's Workshop, because, yeah, we've got 3 full days of professional development before school starts, and I'll probably take a good bet that a lot of that's not going to be let's lesson plan. Here, you get the time to just lesson plan. Go meet with your teachers and come up with some good ideas and really get ready for that first day. Rethink what you do for the first day. Sometimes it is like that. You know, sometimes that's kind of the objective. Like, okay, what have you done before? Let's think about what we're doing next year. I remember one year we actually did that. It was all about how to make the first day of school really fun and exciting, and let's just scrap the here's the curriculum and here's, you know, the materials you need in class. Let's just do something fun the first day and tackle that stuff the second day. So that was cool. And I actually did change what I did based on that work. But having stress in your life is not healthy, right? It's not good. So that's what we're sort of just broadly thinking about today. And of course, at the beginning of this year, there's a lot of different questions, right, that rolls around every teacher's mind. What will this school year be like? What will my students be like? What am I going to do differently? What worked last year and what didn't work? What unit will I bring back and what unit will I lay to rest? What new project will finally wake my students up? What questions will get every hand up in the air? I think English is unique, maybe not that unique from other, or that different from other subject areas, but I feel like we're constantly able to, like science is okay, we have to cover these units. Maybe there's different ways of covering those units. We can get creative with the different projects and different things we can do, but we still have to cover those units. Literature is like that too. We're not always tossing out novels, every single year and starting with new ones, but there is an opportunity to say, do new poems, new short stories, new essays. If you taught long enough, there's a lot of different new units that you've done in the past that are approved that you can do. I'm constantly thinking about Great Expectations. Like, I love Great Expectations, but it's kind of long. My students, I think, like it, not all of them. Maybe because it's too long, but it's a great book. It's a memorable book. Starts a lot of good conversations, but I always go back and forth. Jane Austen, I always think about her. She's one of the best writers of all time, of course. And by the time they get to the end of the novel, they end up liking Jane Austen and appreciating, what she does, but it's a struggle. So, we're always sort of thinking about what we can do better. So the first thing that I've kind of three major points here, and the first one is just adjusting to what your students need. So every year, of course, you get a different set of students with a different set of needs. And I feel like there is this pattern where students are less and less likely to want to present in front of the class. It used to be where the whole class discussion was sort of heart and soul of my class, where I could ask a question and all the hands would shoot up in the air, and it was this great back and forth. But lately, I feel like over the years, maybe because of the pandemic, the people kind of just shut off, I feel like more and more students have anxiety about speaking out loud in front of class. Maybe that's social media, like being in front of people makes them nervous, and being judged or recorded or taking pictures, right? It's all kind of the same idea that you're in front of a crowd, and that somebody might say something about your comment or something like that. I don't know why. I just feel like that has been a pattern that I noticed, where less students want to especially present by themselves without the support of a group. So that's something we got to deal with. It's something that we got to think about. Like, what can we do to still, because it's still important to have public speaking skills, right? So we still want them to be able to do that. It's like how we get them there and get them comfortable and create a good classroom culture that allows them to feel, okay and safe, kind of saying what they feel out loud. So it might mean, okay, let's get students into working groups, and then after they come up with something to share, then they're a little bit more confident because they've had the conversation already and they're just repeating a little bit of what they say. For that reason, I feel like the spontaneous presentation can be better too, because you're not wasting that time saying the same thing twice. If you can get to the point where it moves like that, that's probably ideal. So you ask questions that are at their level and not too complicated, where they don't have to think for a long time before they answer the question. But it can be also something where they spend a long time in a group coming up with something, but then make a very short presentation. So they're not repeating the entire conversation that they've had with their classmates over again. That's a waste of time. But maybe it's really, really short. Put what you came up with in a nutshell, and share that out, or maybe in a visual or something that can be really quick and keep things moving along. If you have students that are distracted in groups, right? Because that's, again, it's like, what are your students like? Maybe you put them in the groups and they're all just kind of crazy and wild and don't focus. Then you can start with independent work and, have them pursue the topic or the question and find the evidence by themselves. And then they shift to working with students, they shift to working with a single partner. So if they're not good in groups, it's like, okay, so turn to the person on your right. Maybe you have your desk arranged in a way where they can quickly find somebody that they're comfortable working with. And then instead of maybe posting, if they're not something, again, if they're just really unwilling to speak their answers out loud, they could post their questions online. Sometimes I'll do it where they don't, where I copy and paste their responses so that there's no name attached, right? So you can probably set it online where the name's not attached to the response, or they just submit it to the teacher, right? So that the rest of the class doesn't see it. And then what I'll do is copy and paste those responses. Sometimes I'll do it from period to period. So I'll grab like another period's responses, so it's not even somebody who's in the class, and then post them in a Word document, and we just kind of review and then open up the conversation. Well, what do you think the person meant by this? Or what's good about this response? Or what's missing? You know, that sort of thing. That will get the conversation going just by looking at people's anonymous responses. So they don't even have to sort of acknowledge that it's their, you know, response to the question. Now, if you have a class, obviously, that likes visuals and graphics, you can have them write their answers on a board and explain that to the class. Posters, you know, Canva has a lot of great options for creating visuals. And they can just explain in words, you know, different phrases and different things that, you know, appear in, say, a one-pager or something like that. I've had, especially during the pandemic, I gave them the opportunity to record something with their phone. So they have an audio recording, so maybe they're not that confident in front of a group. All eyes are on them, but they can record an audio using their phone, submit that, you know, and that just gets them into the practice of speaking out loud and you know, fine-tuning their thoughts about whatever it is what you know that you assigned in the assignment. And think about it. If the new generation is, I just want to sit and learn, right? Like I like going on my phone and you know reading articles and watching videos and that sort of thing, and they just like to be independent and not collaborate. We want to get them away from that, but if that's you know what. If that's how they learn, then let's give them quiet, independent time to you know, do whatever, you know, you want them to do. Maybe they keep a journal for the first 10 minutes of class. You know, you have to free write or journaling, whatever it might be, or just free time to complete the assignment. So I think with all these different things that I'm mentioning, my students, I have a mix, you know, and I basically know the pace of my class where I can't just go in and give independent work every single day. I can't go in and have group, you know, my students work in pairs every single day. I can't go in and have them work in groups every single day because then they'll just get crazy and out of hand, right? There's got to be some accountability there for, you know, what the group's going to be doing and sharing out to the rest of the class. And I can't just make them, hey, let's do another one-pager today and do a one-pager every single day or do some, you know, graphic on Canva every single day. You can't. So for me, it's knowing, okay, we've done a lot of independent work lately. We've done a lot of group work lately. You know, we've worked in pairs a lot lately. That's usually my go-to is working in with one other student. Honestly, over the years, I've gotten to the point where my classroom management is so easy that I give them the option. You can work in by yourself if you want. You can work with another person if you want. You can work with a group if you want. And so they usually just pick what's best suited for them. You know, the kids, and think about it, with every single class, there might be five kids in there that bully them or they don't like for whatever reason, or they just don't know. They just don't know a lot of people in the class, so they don't really feel that comfortable with them. Some of it's getting them out of their shell to become friends with people, right? And mix up the groups as much as we can and get people to work with different kinds of people that are, you know, if you have an elective, say, they're freshmen and seniors in the same class, it's always good to get people out, you know, talking to people they normally wouldn't talk to in their little clique of friends. But, you know, again, this is like about the mix and the variety. So it's like, hey, let's just give students the opportunity to pick whatever is best for them. And that's usually probably the most common thing that I do. Sometimes I'm like, no, this is absolutely, I'll have the chairs in a certain, you know, in groups of six, groups of three, four, depends on how many different passages I want them to go through, that sort of thing. So it, of course, it always depends, but you really have to just adjust to what they need and just to what they need in the particular moment, right? Because you want to mix things up as much as possible and not do the same kind of activity all the time, because then they're just going to like grow in and be like, oh, we're doing this again. Oh, we're doing this again. So you want to get to the point where they don't really know what's going to happen when they walk into class, and they're sort of excited to know what's going to happen. And then when you do make them do the independent work that's kind of boring and just run the mill, you know, you're just going to write an essay today, or you're going to, I really want you to just move through these 10 passages and then we're going to talk about it as a group. You know, though, if you do those every once in a while, they're not going to get tired of them. But if you do them every single day, they're just going to walk into class like, oh, I have to sit here for 20 minutes again, right? So just adjusting to what it is that your students like and need is really important. So the second thing is to not take work home. If you're still taking work home, and now I say this, and I always talk about how much, and this is, again, this is another reason why I started Teachers Workshop, is because I was doing 60, 70, 80 days, hours a week, grading essays, reading novels. You know, so English is a lot when you first start. It's a big part of the reason why I did this, because I struggled with different things, different years when I first started, because I had, was in a couple different schools before I settled down where I am now, and it's really challenging, I think. You know, because I think what happens with first year teachers is that they use assignments as a disciplinary tactic, where they want to hold students accountable for every single thing, every single moment in their class, and that's their way of disciplining the class. Like, oh, if you don't pay attention to do this work, you're going to get a bad grade. And then as time moves along, and the more years you're in education, you realize, okay, so I don't have to do that all the time. I can collect certain assignments. So there's always a kind of risk involved. Like, maybe this won't be graded, but maybe this other thing will. What I do is I just bundle it all together. So I'll collect all the assignments that I assigned and give it one grade. So it's quick to grade, it's easy to grade, but they're still held accountable for all of the work. But it's just, it takes less time for me to grade, and I can do it in school. You know, spacing out your units, you know, how many writing assignments are you giving? Why are you taking work home? Probably because you're assigning too much work. If you assign your students less work, then you're going to take less work home. I think the frequency of writing is important. You know, I used to do it every 2 weeks. I probably do it every 3 weeks now, but I'm able to move through those essays really quickly because I give verbal feedback. So I don't feel guilty not loading up an essay with a million comments, because those comments that I'm going to give them verbally as a class, but also perhaps individually when I walk around the room and I see somebody and I remember what I wanted to say about their essay, or I can answer an individual question. I'm also giving them something to focus on every time I give an essay back. So we're not trying to do 10 different things. When they look at their essays, right? Oh, I got to do this, right? I pick one thing to focus on. They revise that one thing. And then the next time I give an essay back, we're focusing on something else. So my feedback is not that necessary, because I'm going to give a lot of feedback on that one thing when I return the essay. So that's why I don't spend a tremendous amount of time giving written feedback. And the feedback that I give on essays is like shorthand. You know, I have little symbols and different things. But my students also don't have a lot of trouble with grammar. So that's, you know, I know that was a challenge at different places I taught, where you want to feel like you have a million different things about their grammar. But again, if there's something grammatical you want to work on, you can just work on that rather than just teach it, right? We're teachers. So you teach it as opposed to constantly correcting. So, you know, that kind of thing is not always class time well spent. But teaching the thing that you want them to learn is what you want to spend your time doing, not necessarily just saying what they did wrong all the time. They're getting assessed a lot. There's all these standardized tests, and they're getting tested in their other classes. So we want to limit the amount of time that we have on assessment. So, and everything that goes with assessment, and that includes feedback. So I usually limit it to one class period of feedback when I give back an essay, if that. And also just talking about, especially at the beginning of the year, you know, like what other easy to grade writing assignments could replace formal essays, right? So instead of you feeling guilty, like I don't give enough essays, what other kinds of assignments could replace those essays? also thinking about before the school year starts, how do you spend your time at school? Are you taking a lot of like breaks where you're talking? Now that, you know, obviously all this is important, but for me, socializing at work, my kids, my family, my wife, is they're number one in my life. So when I am out the door, they are my priority. I spend enough time at school, okay? I'm coaching my daughter's soccer team next year. They're 100%, like they grow up so fast that I cannot lose even a single day with them. And whoever's in your life, or friends, your family, prioritize them. Your life should get priority over your job. You're already at your job enough. And so to socialize and spend time doing other things at work is not, that to me is like, you know, I'm not prioritizing my family, right? Because if I'm taking work home, that's stuff that it's stuff that I could have done in school, that I would feel guilty, not just working hard at school. So finding a quiet space where you can be work independently with no distractions, where you can eat quickly and then get back to work, right? I don't spend a lot of time eating, you know, these big meals or whatever, going and getting, buying food anywhere. I really maximize the time that I have at work to work. If you have a busy office with a lot of people, maybe it's bringing, I know a lot of people in my office have headphones where it's like, oh, that person's got their headphones on. Like they're in the zone. They're clearly grading essays. Like don't go over there. So there's ways of sending signals to people that you're doing work and that you're trying not to bring it home. So that's really important too. Generally how I start my week is that I, plan a lot. So that all the planning for the week is done. I know the direction I'm going to go. I have all my handouts ready to go within you know, Monday or Tuesday. And then slowly throughout the week, I'll basically shift to grading. If I can't get the grading done, it's not like I'm like, oh, then I guess this weekend I'm going to be grading. No, I just find creative ways of extending the unit. You know, there's another assignment. There's something else we can do, maybe a short story, poem, essays, you know, something extra to connect to the ideas, or give them a couple extra days to write the essay, something like that, or creative, like, write a short story, create a short film, like some kind of creative activity that will extend the unit a little. And then, that will give you more time to get your grading done. Instead of taking it home for the weekend, you have a couple more days the next week because you have this creative activity. The last thing is to ask your students to express themselves in modern ways. So again, that routine of another essay, another writing assignment, whatever, it doesn't matter what that writing assignment is, no matter how amazing you make it. They live in the 21st century, right, 2023, and they want to create a video. They want to create podcasts. They want to create a graphic, right? They you can still have them write, but you can also have them, be a citizen in the real world where they're going to communicate with other tools, right? And so, of course, people still read, and maybe they're reading more than they ever have, who knows? But they're also going to want to hear, somebody speak out loud in front of a group, like a TED Talk, kind of, if you want to do it that way. Writing will always be the foundation of an English class, but packaging and communicating that writing with media can be exciting for students. This includes video essays, short films, podcasts, graphic essays, one-pagers, and of course the PowerPoint slide. There was this one unit that I had on satire. It's Addison and Steele. They do The Spectator and The Tatler. And it's basically the Colbert Report and Daily Show in the 1700s. And at the end, they someone of the groups created a broadcast news, kind of like they do on Talks. It's called Talk Soup, but just like The Daily Show, where they had slides of the news of the day, and they had these sort of fun commentaries about all the different celebrity behavior and all of that. If they want to do a website or a political cartoon, short stories, short films, any kind of sort of creative way that they can express themselves, always. Makes, again, like I started, life more fun and less stressful and more memorable, right? Something they can sort of take away, like I created this as opposed to I wrote this assignment, right? So if you want to get more ideas for projects and assignments and all the things I'm talking about, again, I mentioned at the beginning, I have an online course that I offer where you can download all my materials, look at my projects, and different things I've assigned. And I kind of talk about it in a video, in a screencast where there's a video of me talking and you'll see my handouts next to me talking. You can sort of answer my questions, see what other teachers are saying about the same topics. You can sort of learn from me, learn from other teachers. So thanks for listening, everybody. I would really appreciate it if you gave me a review wherever you get your podcasts. And now my kids are awake and yelling, so I'm going to go live my life. Happy summer if you're still there and if school's starting. Hopefully you're really enjoying it. I think the first days of school are some of the most exciting and fun days. So have fun with that. But thanks for listening.